Hello, I'm Bruce Edwards, and welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. In this program, India's digital payment boom and what it could mean for development.
Some of the problems that have existed for decades and 50 years, maybe 100 years in some places, we really have the opportunity to solve a lot of those problems over the next literally 5 years.
When the government of India last year declared that almost 90% of all currency in circulation would cease to be legal tender, digital transactions surged. Mobile payment platforms like Paytm, one of India's largest, stepped in to fill the void left by demonetization, and in the process are providing financial services to millions of people who were unable to open a traditional bank account. Madhur Diora is Paytm's chief financial officer. I met him in Washington while he was here for a seminar about fintech during the IMF World Bank annual meetings.
And so where do mobile payments fit into India's economy?
So until 4 years ago, there was no mobile payments, right? The layer that we work off of is the fact that smartphone penetration in India is growing. So there are probably about 200 or 250 million people in India who have smartphones, and it should become 60-70% of our population in the next few years. So that gives us an opportunity to innovate. And one of the key things that we see is if you can give customers an app through which they can pay all their bills in a single place, so you don't have to go to each one of your utility companies and enter your credit card information and so on. And then the bigger problem to solve is offline payments, where smartphones play an even bigger role, because now finally you have a smart device with you all the time. So now the merchant does not need a smart device, because in order for a digital payment to go through, only one of you needs a smart device. The other can be a dumb device.
When you say dumb device, you mean a phone that doesn't necessarily hook up to the internet?
No, let's say a credit card.
Oh, I see. Okay.
A credit card is a dumb device. Mm-hmm. It cannot really process a transaction. Hence, the merchant needed a smart device connected to the internet or through some other type of connectivity to be able to process your transaction. Now, if you carry a smart device, then I can give the merchant a dumb device, which doesn't cost them anything, which in our case is a QR code printed on a sticker. Wow. So instead of $100, what we call a POS device, the merchant can have something which costs us about 30 cents and we give it for free. So within a few hours or a few minutes, really, the merchant can start accepting digital payments. And the whole conversation then shifts from, I need you to spend $100 to buy a device, and you need to connect it to the internet, and you need to pay me a fee, and you have to worry about paper rolls and all that good stuff, to, I'm just going to put a sticker here. It won't cost you anything. Why wouldn't you do it? So why would I do all those things to why wouldn't I do it? And that change of conversation actually changes everything.
So how big is your business? Like, how many subscribers do you have?
Yeah, so we have 270 million registered users. And that grows at about 10 million a month.
Wow.
Right. So some point next year, we'll have more registered users than the population of the United States. But more interestingly, perhaps, is that we have 5 million merchants who accept payments using Paytm, compared to only about 1 million merchants in India who accept payments using cards. So because of the novelty and the innovation of the solution, somebody who is selling vegetables on the street, or somebody who is actually even shining shoes on the street, can start accepting Paytm. So all the way from roadside merchants to large retail and supermarkets. Because if you take a step back, the card network in India is actually very similar to the card network in the US, and it addresses the use cases which the affluent go to, right? So fancy hotels, restaurants, supermarkets, department stores, maybe some movie theaters and a few other things and that. That solution actually cannot serve the roadside retailer or a small medicine shop, right? It just doesn't make sense for the card companies to do that. So then you have to fundamentally rethink the technology and what we call the transaction flow. And you have to rethink the whole business model around it, which is I think, what we have been able to do successfully.
So, I was going to ask you, there's obviously a huge business potential. I mean, the technology offers huge business potential, but can it also help in India's development?
Oh, absolutely. So If you do digital payments, then you also leave a footprint. First of all, there are no cash transactions, so there's no informal economy, right? So from a government standpoint, it is very important because they know exactly what's going on and they can tax what they intend to tax, right? But also, if we know enough about you because you do digital payment transactions, we can offer you a loan at a rate which is much cheaper than what you could otherwise get, right? So if I know that, you know, for the last 6 months, you have paid a utility bill and the utility bill was a certain size and you've paid it on time, then I can probably give you as a loan 5 or 10 times that amount without asking you any questions because I know you're good for it, right?
So you could have loans as small as a few hundred dollars, perhaps?
You can have a loan as small as $10, right? And we're doing that already where if you're buying something on the 26th of the month and you don't have money in your wallet, we can say, well, we know enough about you. You can pay us later because we know enough about your payment journey to know that this person is generally good for it, right? They do a certain behavior for the last 6 months and they have affordability. Maybe they just don't have money right now. So we can solve for borrowing, access to credit. We can also solve for access to savings products because our distribution is very, very cheap. So I don't actually care if you want to just save $1. That's great. You're welcome, right? Just come save the $1. And just come on the Paytm app and you have 60 rupees and you say, okay, I want to buy a fixed deposit with 60 rupees or I want to buy gold with 60 rupees. We'll make that available to you. So the cost of distributing that financial product for us is very, very low. And that increases access.
So it's a complete game changer, right? Because banks generally aren't interested in small deposits. They're not interested in doing business. It's small transactions because it costs them money. So this really is a game changer for a lot of people.
So the cost structures can be very different depending on the product, of course. So I don't want to sort of overgeneralize, but it is possible that to find opportunities where traditional infrastructure is not able to lower the cost of distribution or the low cost of processing a financial product, maybe through paper statements and whatnot. Or is able to create a technology infrastructure which can reduce the cost of payments enough, as a result of which it has to exclude people who are either not able to, who don't see the merit of paying the fee, or their transaction sizes are too small, right? So as a result, you know, the access to the financial products becomes very interesting.
Hmm. And so what about oversight? I mean, what is the relationship between Paytm and the central bank, for example? Do they have any influence on the way that you guys do business, or do you have any influence, do you think, on their policy decisions?
Actually, we, earlier this year, launched Paytm Payments Bank. So we are actually now a bank which is regulated by the central bank in ways which are similar to how they would regulate other banks. So they've created a new category of licenses called payments banks. So these are not full commercial banks, but payments banks. And we are actually now able to do a lot of things that perhaps as a wallet we couldn't do, right? And they've created that obviously with the mission of financial inclusion and providing access to payments as well as other services to people who are perhaps underserved, right? And that is our mission. As the central bank, which is the RBI, Reserve Bank of India, actually regulates us more or less like they would regulate a bank.
And do you think that at some point things may become overly regulated?
Actually, for most fintech companies, and there are different flavors of fintech company, right? But if you want to have the impact at the scale that we think is possible, then you need to expand the scope of your activities pretty dramatically, right? So what we want to be able to do is that on a single app, you can do all the things that you intend to do with your could possibly do with your money, right? Which is earn, spend, save, borrow. Those are fundamentally the four things that you want to do with your money. Within spend, you can include send and receive from friends and family. But those are fundamentally the things that you want to do. Now, our ambition is that we want people to be able to do all of that in a single platform because we believe that that reduces the friction dramatically and makes this the default way of them operating their cash. If you're going to have that ambition, you are going to be regulated, right? There's no getting away from the fact that regulators will have an interest, rightly so, in making sure that this platform behaves in the way that it should, which is really around keeping customer money safe, making sure there's no money laundering or terrorist financing, making sure that there's no mis-selling of products, making sure that the data is being handled properly. So the regulators will have an interest, right? There might be other companies who say, listen, I really, really don't want to get regulated, so I'll limit the scope of what we do. But that's not the journey that we have chosen for ourselves.
You don't think that there's a conflict in, you know, the sort of the structure of the central bank, which is a very old, deeply rooted institution, and you have this, you know, very rapidly changing financial technology. You don't see a conflict there?
I think everybody recognizes that there are unsolved problems, and there's some very difficult problems to solve. So what we have found is that regulators are actually quite open to having that conversation. It, like you're pointing out, it may not be their default behavior. It may not have been their default behavior, certainly 5 or 10 years ago. But they're waking up to see that technology, the application of technology at very large scale, can solve some of the problems that they care about very deeply, which is that, you know, money is untracked and, you know, a lot of the money sits in cash, which is very expensive for the economy. People who are deserving of loans actually don't get loans. So just a lack of financial inclusion, which is a problem in most emerging markets, I don't think India is unique in that, is a problem that bothers well-meaning central bankers. And now I think, you know, in the last few years, regulators around the world have woken up to the fact that financial technologies can solve those problems, right? So I think there's a good conversation to be had. I don't see that as them saying we just want things to be exactly the way they have been historically, because especially in emerging markets, a lot of big problems yet to be solved.
And were you surprised to be invited to, you know, the IMF? And there's various, you know, seminars and panels talking about financial technology. No. Are you surprised at how interested the international financial institutions are of the potential that financial technology offers?
I suppose yes and no, because it is such an important topic, and some of the problems that have existed for decades and 50 years, maybe 100 years in some places, we really have the opportunity to solve a lot of those problems over the next literally 5 years, right? Maybe 10 years, but literally 5 years, we can see some real big impact.
That's impressive.
When you see, for example, what has happened in China, there are people in China who actually basically don't carry cash with them anymore. They actually don't even carry cards, right? They just use the Alipay app, for example, to make all their payments, and they're able to access all these financial products and so on. So there's a huge impact that is possible, and we have certainly seen over the last maybe 2 or 3 years that all well-meaning bodies around the world, whether they're central banks or whether they're organizations like IMF or World Bank or World Economic Forum, are seeing this as, you know, perhaps one of the top 2 or 3 changes or developments around the world which can have the biggest impact.
So do you feel perhaps that you're like an entrepreneur that has become an expert in development?
I think that might be pushing it a bit, but I think we certainly see that the potential for social impact of some of the things that we do, and we see that this is starting to have some behavior-changing outcomes, and very soon some life-changing outcomes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Madhur Deora, Chief Financial Officer of Paytm, one of India's largest mobile payment platforms. You can watch the webcast of the IMF World Bank Annual Meeting Seminar entitled FinTech, Challenges to Regulation and Central Banking at imf.org. And if you like this podcast, subscribe on iTunes or on your favorite podcast app. Just search for IMF Podcasts. And you can also now follow us on Twitter @IMF_podcast.